Hello, everybody. Welcome to a new episode of Tech Can't Save Us podcast, brought to you by Literal Humans. As always, I'm Paul David, your co-founder and co-host of Tech Can't Save Us. I'm without my esteemed co-host, Will, today. He's out in Prague singing for our supper. He's at a client meeting trying to get us an upgrade and a client engagement we got going on. So we wish him the best of luck. Fingers crossed. But I'm joined today by the job father himself, Jermaine Murray, founder and leader of Jupiter HR. Welcome to the pod, Jermaine.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it. And hopefully that meeting in Prague flips into something. A meeting in Prague sounds pretty big still.
I mean, normally Will gets the crap assignments and I get the fun assignments and stuff like that. We switch places this time. He's on a fun little journey. I think he's got some nice tours of Prague going on. I'm sure he's going to eat well, drink well. So we're happy for him. We wish him the best of luck. And I appreciate that. Today, we want to talk about powering diversity in tech. I know that's like a core mission of yours and a value of yours. We're very excited to have you on. Just real quick, Jupiter HR for our audience is a career coaching and recruitment company that helps Black job seekers land their dream tech roles. Does that seem like a good definition of what you do, what you focus on? Anything you want to add?
Yeah, that's a pretty good TLDR. Only thing I would add is we are trying to help 500 Black people get new jobs in tech. And since 2019, we've helped 401 people.
That's amazing.
Black people get new jobs in tech.
That's amazing. Well, congrats on that. And I love when folks set like a smart goal, like, you know, it's specific and measurable and you know, targeted, and you set it, you're tracking yourself to it. And more importantly, holding yourself accountable to that goal. So that's really important. Appreciate that. Let's jump into it and kind of set the scene for our audience and give them kind of a sense of what's going on out there for Black folks in the tech job market, because this is something we're passionate about at Literal Humans as a Black-owned agency. And something that, you know, you look at our team page, you can see another agency founder called it the United Colors of Benetton, you know, the other day, our team page, which is something we're very proud of. But it's something that, you know, I think powers our agency and something that is your core focus. So just jumping into it, you know, we've all seen the stats, you know, stats around Black representation in the tech sector are pretty shocking. We'd love for you to explain for our audience why, you know, representation and Black representation in particular matters in tech for both businesses and ordinary folks. For example, you know, banking platforms designed, you know, with Black customers in mind, you know, and how they can improve their access to financial services. So like, why is this so critically important?
Yeah, I think it's critically important for like a number of different reasons, but like, all right, well, I'll start from like the business sense. You know, from the business sense, it just makes a lot of sense, because when you look at, especially like the North American markets, a large section or a large piece of the population are Black people. And the Black experience isn't one that is a universal one that, you know, you could approach it the same way that you might approach other ethnicities or diverse groups. And to be real, every single diverse group has its own ethos and, you know, its own best practices for approaching it. But when it comes to Black engagement and Black employees, or even just being involved or incorporated within tech, we seem to be put to the wayside. And it's rather unfortunate, because on the flip side, you know, a lot of programs or a lot of platforms, especially within the social media space, they see an unprecedented amount of success when they get engaged with like the Black community. Twitter became a huge big thing because of the strength of Black tech Twitter. Instagram grew when everyone started co-opting, like, you know, Black imagery or Black sayings. The same thing with, say, a platform like YouTube, for instance, right? A lot of just Black culture powers a lot of tech. And from the candidate or the people side of it, the real reason why it's important is, A, with as pervasive as tech is within our society and just as a whole, not having Black voices in the room leaves up like a big opportunity for us to be overlooked and for technologies to not incorporate our experiences into them. A couple of years ago, if you were to Google Black mom, for instance, you'd get explicit images on the Google image search, because that was like, for some reason, the coders only really attributed Black mom to that phrase and not to like the actual nurturing characters that so many of us grew up with. So not only is it like a matter of not being included, it's a matter of making sure that these technologies don't harm us. And then just on a personal note, right, the salaries and the quality of life, and I would even say the work-life balance for a good portion of the opportunities within tech are super desirable, that has ripple effects, you know, like it has ripple effects in terms of how people view themselves. It has ripple effects in terms of the opportunities that people have. It has ripple effects in terms of, you know, how people can finally figure out their way in life, whether that's being able to align their careers with their internal goals and who they are as people, or just being able to find a career that enables them to actually live a life that they enjoy living. This is the dude from Toronto talking now. On a personal note, I am seeing Black neighborhoods be disrupted and Black people being at the raw end of the stick when it comes to gentrification, because the buying power isn't there and we get pushed out, ironically enough, by a lot of these nomads or a lot of these people that have these tech jobs, right? Or in some cases, finance jobs or some other high impact industry role. And they're pushing us out of our own neighborhoods, right? Those neighborhoods that have history, right? Black history are suddenly being being redefined to like prop up the history and the culture, but not include the people that made that possible.
That's really interesting, because I've I love how you connected the buying power that comes with a tech job and the, you know, quality of life status increase ostensibly that comes with working in tech. And if a lot of those jobs aren't going to Black folks, then they're going to other folks who are then, you know, driving gentrification in traditionally Black neighborhoods. I've not heard. I mean, it makes logical sense, and it exists. It's probably just a fact, right? But I've not heard folks connect the dots that way as you have so eloquently and say, hey, you know, we need to give folks access to jobs and quality of life enhancements and include them in the tech sector, because the tech sector is going to drive, you know, economic change in a lot of these neighborhoods. So, you know, why shouldn't we be included in that? So that I think that's a fantastic argument. One thing I want to talk about is sort of Black tech workers. One thing is getting the job, right? And we know the stats, you know, and how hard access has been. It's another thing to keep the job and to feel like you're working in a space as a Black tech worker where you feel included, where you feel empowered, where you feel, you know, the space is created with me in mind, right? So some of the stats, you know, we see here, Black IT employees have a shorter average tenure than their non-Black counterparts, 3.5 years versus 5.1 years. Nearly half of Black employees want to quit their jobs in tech because they see there's a lack of pay transparency, lack of alignment between company values and personal values. Lack of diverse leadership is another reason for that. And young Black people report 57%, you know, less likely to have positive experiences at work than their white counterparts. So your focus is getting folks into the job. But what are your thoughts on, you know, tech companies taking a bigger, stronger effort at creating diverse and inclusive and equitable environments once they get the job?
I work with a lot of organizations on how they can retain Black talent, because just as you said, I'd be like, what's the point of like doing the whole talent acquisition strategy if you're just going to lose a person in a couple of years, or in some cases, even like a couple of months, right? And then on the flip side, I always talk to, you know, Black people in these situations about empowering themselves and knowing when to leave a situation that no longer suits them. On the corporate side too, like, the companies that maintain the most consistency when it comes to like retaining talent, especially like their high impacting talent, are the ones that outperform their contemporaries. They're the ones that corner markets, right? And like I said earlier too, a lot of times for like a lot of these tech companies, especially on the social media side of things, they leverage a lot of Black experiences in order to get to those high valuations. I'll never forget watching Clubhouse pop up on the scene in early 2020. And, you know, it was just this thing of like audio rooms and nobody was really paying attention to it. And then you got a couple of Black voices on there now, you know, Black culture gets a hold of it. We got the rooms with the jokes. We got the rooms with the information, right? We just make things really, really cool. You know what I'm saying? And then all of a sudden they're like, yo, we're a $2 billion valuation company. Ah, and I'm just like, who are the Black employees there, right? There are no Black employees. So it's like, I don't want to say that we're owed, but like when you think of like the ROI, or where you think of like the actual sweat equity the Black community does or puts in to like facilitate the growth of a lot of these tech companies, it's huge. And a lot of times, like we're not on the ownership board, right? You know, you see like less than 3% of tech boards or tech companies, less than 3% of them have less than 3% of their tech forces or their C-suites are Black people, mm-hmm. right? We're mm-hmm. not even decision makers. So like at the very least, we can make sure that we get adequate. We get paid for that in the form of like jobs and contributions. And like I said, making sure that certain products don't go down the route of harming Black people or that Black experience. So it's like there's a huge conversation here in terms of what our participation should look like versus what it actually is.
Yeah. You're hitting on like one of the core tensions of this podcast and why we named it what we did, like Tech Can't Save Us, right? Like, so we see what's going on. We're careful pragmatists, I should say, and cautious realists, you know, like and about what tech can actually do for us, how the tech community can actually come together and deliver products and services that will actually advance humanity, right? That's why we call it what we do. So you mentioned, you know, one specific example, Clubhouse, of a company that, you know, arguably didn't do it the right way in terms of adequately compensating, you know, Black folks who helped grow their platform. Are there any examples out there for audience of like who's getting it right? Like who are the companies that are actually, you know, empowering Black creators and people within their companies and, you know, putting Black folks on the board and really, you know, investing in Black leadership, you know, up and down the chain, that, you know, just examples that folks can learn from? Anything out there you can think of?
None of them.
Yeah.
None of them.
And that's fair too, right? That's a data point. Like, is there anyone that's getting close or?
I would say that there are a couple of companies that are don't get me wrong. There are a lot of companies I see that are laying down roots and trying to build like that foundational piece in to make sure that they have adequate Black representation or Black input. I think a company like DraftKings actually has a really good foundation when it comes to making sure that they have voices from Black employees and making sure that their Black employees are supported. And even if you look at a company like maybe even like a Canadian company like Wealthsimple, yeah, sure, like they do a really good job in terms of like that Black employee experience. But I do think that there's still a big area of opportunity when it comes to Black influence, right? When it comes to having that voice that spearheads the company or pushes the ideas forward and getting that proper credit, I still think that there's a lot to be desired outside of like some of the companies that are maybe Black owned, like a Calendly, for instance, right? Calendly is Black owned. So I think by default, that might fall into there. But like, as a whole, I look at the industry, especially, you know, the shift in change from what it was like in 2020 to like where we are now. And like DEI has been demonized in a lot of cases, right? Affirmative action is dead, you know what I'm saying? And every time that there is initiative to facilitate, propel, engage, embrace, enable Black people to either get jobs or opportunities or to get funding, it's immediately shut down. And a lot of people have now co-opted the term of like woke. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? I cringe when I hear someone say, oh, that's woke. And, you know, that's the woke virus. And they weaponize that to delegitimize these platforms or these initiatives. And just the way that the world is working, it's actually working. We saw it happen with Harvard. We saw it happen with a couple of the investment funds in San Francisco that are geared towards supporting Black women. We are seeing it every time Boeing is in the damn news. I always, you know, if I'm on a social media page or something, or if I'm on Reddit, if I'm on Facebook or whatever, every time Boeing has a problem, they're like, oh, look, there goes that DEI again, right?
Really?
Like, what are you talking about? Yeah.
I've not seen that. So Boeing leadership, they're basically blaming DEI for the problems they have of their planes just falling out of the air. Like, what's the deal here?
Yeah, that's literally what it is. Like, wow. they blame it as a DEI. I get very frustrated with people because like people will equate DEI as preferential treatment or hiring based off of a person's skin color, when in reality it's just like making sure people are visible or just getting a shot, right? Or making sure that you have representation in your pipeline so that, you know, if you make a hire and it is a Black person, it's because of like the foundations you put in there. And if it's not a Black person, you had the best practices in play and you can truly say the best person got the job. The reality is that meritocracy is a myth. I say it all the time. Yeah. Meritocracy is a damn myth. And you can just ask it of anybody Black. You can ask it of anybody Black that's been up for a promotion that got passed over for the promotion. You can literally go into a space. Every time I've gone into a workspace or every time I worked in a corporate space and there was me or other Black people there, I could look at like the background of those Black people and I could see that they have extra degrees, extra experiences compared to their non-Black counterparts, where they had to overachieve to just get half as much. And like, you ask any Black person about the whole conversation that parents have with Black kids about doing twice as much to get half as much. That's a real thing. Mm-hmm. That's a real thing that I heard from my Jamaican parents. Mm-hmm. It's a real thing that my Trinidadian friends heard from their parents. It's a real thing that my Black British friends heard from their parents. My Nigerian friends.
Yeah,
heard
it's not from coming from parents, nowhere. Right? Yeah,
it's not. You know what I'm saying? It's coming from everywhere. So, you know, so it's like, at a certain point, it feels just like a lot of projection. But like the way that things are right now, right, with the layoffs, and like I said, you know, you look at what happened with Harvard, you look at, you know, what's been happening with DEI, you look at what's happening. I think it was like the other day I read an article where a white mom complained that Morgan Stanley's DEI program to help, you know, HBCUs or to help more Black people get in on Wall Street was preventing her white son from getting a job on Wall Street, and that she was worried that there wouldn't be white representation on Wall Street. Even just saying it is irritating, because like, if you walk on Wall Street right now, right, you walk into the NYSE and the New York Stock Exchange, you're going to have to actually go out and look to find a Black face. There's a high chance you're not just going to randomly bump into somebody that's Black, right? Most of the time it's the dominant demographic. So it's just weird that you have people complaining about meritocracy and like it only exclusively applies to Black people.
Yeah, it's sort of like, I mean, it seems a shame that like there's been like folks are creating wedges, you know, between communities rather than it being sort of a holistic goal or a collective goal of like, we want diverse spaces wherever we go, particularly in, you know, countries like Canada and the U.S. and to some degree, you know, Europe. Like, we have underneath us a relatively diverse population. So why shouldn't, you know, our spaces to some extent mimic that population? And what we have is people being pitted, you know, communities within that being pitted against each other and saying, oh, we have to compete for finite, you know, resources, rather than actually we insist that these spaces are truly diverse and in the broadest sense of the word. And we're on that journey together. But instead, it's like, how do we fight for scraps and things like that? I think that's, you know, really, really sad, really problematic. I love to like tap into your career coaching wisdom and kind of offer some advice to our listeners, particularly our Black listeners who might be looking for their next tech role. So if the landscape is as you say it is, and you know, it's really tough, we know the stats, a lot of these companies aren't trying to do right by Black folks, unfortunately, or maybe that they sort of say they are, but it's marketing, it's window dressing. I want to start with the green flags. What are the green flags that you would recommend, you know, Black candidates in tech space should look for in potential employers?
They should look for employers that have Black ERGs, employer resource groups. Right, specifically, that usually shows that the company has some sort of dedication or some sort of effort in allocating resources in order to support Black employees or help them build community. They should be looking for companies that have Black representation at every level of like leadership, not just middle managers, but also senior managers, directors, VPs, right? Someone on the C-suite. Right. Looking for those type of opportunities. I think a question that I always encourage Black people to ask is asking a company. There are certain times in like historically and unfortunately, just the way things going probably in the future, where there is going to be a crisis that is uniquely felt in the Black community. How do you go about supporting your Black employees during those moments? Right. And just, it's not even just what they say, but it's how they say it, right? If you got the person that you're speaking with, they start stuttering and they don't really have a clear, coherent answer. I think that tells you everything that you need to know more than what it is that they actually say. And then if you got somebody that gives you that clear, coherent answer, even if it's not where they'd like it to be, right? That tells you that there is a level of comfortability in that subject matter that will allow them to facilitate or have the space to have those tough conversations about, you know, what does this crisis mean? How is it affecting our employees? What resources should we allocate towards that? And do we need to have a larger conversation company-wide to ensure that this remains a safe and inclusive space?
Yeah. What would you say are the red flags that you tell folks to look out for when they're job hunting?
Red flags? A first red flag that comes to mind is we don't talk politics here. Mm. You know, so if an interview says that to me, that's a super red flag because I'm a Black man. Like my whole entire life is politics. Like I always tell people, like, I think the most frustrating thing about being a Black man is that people always assume that you make everything about race or that you're quick to pull the race card. When in actuality, I know for the default for a lot of Black people, if they're faced with some sort of racist situation, they actually try to gaslight themselves into believing that it's something else. You know what I'm saying? That it's not, like, it couldn't possibly be this racist because, like, you can't, it just can't be. It just doesn't make any sense. And we be looking for every single nook and cranny, try to look for every single way to justify or rationalize it. And then when it doesn't make sense, the only thing that makes sense is that, damn, it really is the race thing, right? So I definitely always give a side eye to that. You know, we don't see race here, or we don't talk politics, because that means to tell me that, like, again, I'm a Black man, you know what I'm saying? Like, it is unfortunately not uncommon for me to be harassed by police just by minding my own business, right? That in itself is political. And that wasn't me going on and search for it. That's just how the world treats me based on how I'm viewed. Another red flag would be companies that didn't do anything for Black History Month, right? Or for any, or making space for their Black employees, whether that means a forum, whether that means bringing in speakers, or whether that means just putting in resources. If it's an American-based company, asking how many people they sent to Afrotech, for example, is a good way to see, like, where their mind's at, right? Because a lot of people at Afrotech, they went to Afrotech because their employer sponsored it, right? It's an expensive conference. But, like, I know, like, some companies sent in, like, over 100 people, right? And, like, some companies only sent in 10, right? It's not really the number, but it's the space and and making the budget available to send people to those kind of conferences because of how important it is for retention purposes, but also to put your money where your mouth is.
Yeah. Well, I mean, speaking of putting your money where your mouth is, I'd love to hear more about your journey with Jupiter HR. First of all, love the name. It just, as marketing nerds, just curious about how you came up with it, how you landed on Jupiter HR. Maybe you could tell us that real quick first.
Ironically enough, it came from my background as a video game nerd, right? You know, whenever you get there's this video game called The Knights of the Old Republic. It's a Star Wars game from 2003, and it's a create your character type of thing, right? And I was like, yo, I want to have like a Star Wars-y name. You know what I'm saying? Like, Anakin Skywalker sounds so cool. Obi-Wan Kenobi. And I was like, what's a really spacey thing? And I was like, oh, like, alliteration's always good. So I was like, Jupiter, you know, Jermaine Jupiter. Oh, that works, right? So that was my Star Wars character. I think the irony is that I used to give myself a whole bunch of different nicknames and none of them really stuck. But Jermaine Jupiter stuck as like a Twitter handle. And people would like see me on the street and they'd be like, oh, yo, it's Jermaine Jupiter. You know, it's Jupiter. Oh, what's up, Zeus? You know, I always loved that. Right. And then, you know, when it came time for me to like launch like an actual brand and a business, the word Jupiter just stuck out to me. And, you know, I just, because of like the work that we do, I like the sound of like HRs added to it. So Jupiter HR was kind of born from my love of Star Wars and video games and create a character, but it just all flowed together. You know what I'm saying? Like when I did research on like what like Jupiter, the actual planet, was like, or like, you know, its characteristics or what it means from like a mythology standpoint, a lot of it just resonated with me. It even has like if you do like the Myers-Briggs test on the planet, I don't know how you do a Myers-Briggs test on the planet, but you got a lot of reports saying that Jupiter is an ENFP, which is my same Myers-Briggs type.
That's funny.
So it you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, I appreciate
it. It just kind of all flowed from that.
No, I like that. Well, I mean, I guess like, so Jupiter is very distinct as a planet, obviously the largest one in our solar system. Curious how Jupiter HR is different from other recruiters and how, you know, how you landed on this goal and this journey of helping 500 Black folks find, you know, really high quality tech jobs. So yeah. And also just what you learned along the way. So kind of just like walk us through that journey of starting this company and how you're distinct.
Yeah. So it all started with myself wanting to get into tech. I actually have a background and a bachelor's in broadcast journalism. And again, when I tell you that I was trying to give myself a different nickname that wasn't playing, my radio nickname that I gave myself was Audio Chocolate, mm-hmm. right?
Nice.
Thank God that did not stick.
Yeah, yeah. I sometimes tell people that if I become a DJ being over here in Europe, my nickname's going to be Black Americano, you know, like similar to Black Coffee, South African DJ, just a little tweak on it, something. So
I'd be walking into coffee shops and they ask me if I wanted an Americano. So like, I get exactly what
I heard it the other day in a coffee shop and I was like, ooh, it's just reminding me it's a good DJ name. I need to land on it at some point.
Before I got into tech, you know, as a side hustle, I used to write resumes, right? Like I had like a really bad experience with a resume that I bought. And then, you know, I was just really desperate. I walked into an office, handed in my resume, and I got laughed out of the place. And it made me sit down and like figure out what really makes a good resume. And I figured out how to make a really good resume. And, you know, it got to the point where my resumes were doing really well, where like my friends and I would be chilling and, you know, we'd put Indeed up on my TV and we start taking bets on whether or not I'd be hearing back in a couple of weeks or whatnot. And I was always hearing back within like the first week or two to any job posting I sent my resume to. And my friends were like, yo, can you help me get jobs? Can you help us get jobs? And I got all my friends' jobs and my resumes. And, you know, that was like the start of like the business aspect of it. But I was never able to crack the industry code for like getting into radio. So I ended up working a lot of retail jobs. And on one of my jobs, I was having a really bad day. Like I split my pants, you know, someone yelled at me. It was just rough. And I remember saying to myself, I don't know if I can do this because I'm the type of person where if I don't love what I'm doing, I check out. Right. And then when I check out, it just makes the whole entire day a lot longer than it should be. Yeah. So I asked myself, you know, if I could do anything in this world, what would it be? And the answer was I would love to get paid to play video games. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to be a pro gamer. So I was like, you know, at the very least, let me try to work for like PlayStation and get like a free PlayStation when the PS5 drops. And I don't have to do like the Hunger Games stuff that I had to do for like the PS3 and the PS4. Spoiler alert, I didn't get the job at PlayStation, so I still had to do the Hunger Games stuff for the mm-hmm. PS5. Mm-hmm. It was a trial, but what I ended up doing was I went on PlayStation's website and I looked for jobs that, you know, prioritize communication skills, prioritize nothing around math or organization, but like just really, again, I'm a good talker, I'm a good communicator and things around that. And I came across a recruitment job. And honestly, as I was reading it, I was like, the only thing I'm missing from this job is the actual like 5+ years of technical recruitment experience. So like, let me go and get that. And I got my first job at an agency. And that was when everything started to kind of like come together and click for me. I got somebody a really strong offer. They told me how it changed their life. And I realized at that point in time that for the 6 months that I was there, the only Black person I saw get an offer for a tech company at this agency was me, right? And it was for the agency itself. So I prioritized, you know, I was like, you know, I have a community, I have an ability to connect with people, and I know a bunch of Black people that could kill these jobs. So I prioritized getting more Black people in. And, you know, my dad always says that, you know, you're doing something right when people start having beef with you about it.
Oh, man.
And
yeah, that's true. Well, you stand for something. I mean, I think that's really important. Like, I think there's like a lot of folks in this day and age are sort of, because of social media and how easy it is to go viral in the wrong way, they're kind of cowed into taking a stance on things and actually showing up as the full selves because they're worried that that beef is going to be public or, you know, someone's going to, you know, I don't know, like cancel them or something like that. And I think that's really powerful to kind of call out some of these big companies for their lack of a commitment to DEI, for example, and just stand for something. So have you had like, you know, big companies like come at you with beef, like, you know, about the work that you're trying to do, or what have you experienced?
All the time. Yeah. All the time. I went off and did entrepreneurship because pretty much every single company except for one, which was Wealthsimple didn't have a beef with it, but every single company I worked with would feel uncomfortable about the Black focus that I had. And like the agency specifically, the first one I was working at, you know, I had a good relationship with my boss, but like one day she took me across it. She took me into the lunchroom and she was like, you can't be the only Black recruiter that we have and all you're submitting is Black people. And I was like, you don't see the disconnect there, fam? Mm-hmm. Like, first of all, why am I the only Black person in your staff? right?
But also, like, that she would never, like, there's probably any number of white recruiters who are only submitting white names or not yes. submitting black names that would never receive that, you know, like, the sort of the inverse of that message. You know what I mean? So, like, exactly. I find that that's really, yeah, that's, I'm sorry that happened to you. That's terrible.
Nah, it was my crucible. It was a character defining moment because, like, again, stand for something or fall for anything. And it was like, I actually said that to her. I was like, yo, like, when I was just submitting all white people or submitting all Asian people or submitting all Indian people, you know, nobody batted an eye, but like I submit a couple of black people and everybody loses their friggin' minds. Like, how am I supposed to take that? Right. And I have this, my quote was my damn tagline was created from there where I was like, you can't overrepresent for an underrepresented group. It's like mathematically impossible.
Yeah.
Right. So you should, while you're here telling me that, you know, might have to reconsider some things at my job if I don't change direction, you should be thanking me, right? And just the hostility that I would meet every single job that I went to, people didn't value black talent. They seemed to think that we were a charity case or something, that we weren't valid, right? And it just got irritating. So, like, you know, every time I helped a black person get a job, I documented that because I was just mad proud of it. You know what I'm saying? And it got to the point where I grew a community through a WhatsApp group. And this also got me in a lot of trouble with my agencies because I would tell people like, yo, if you're in this WhatsApp group and if you have an interview coming up and you want an interview prep for it, even if the job isn't through me, it's through another recruiter, I don't care. I'll interview prep you and I want to make sure that you go in swinging, right? The first year I did that was 2019. And I helped 67 black people get new jobs in tech. I also had to change employers 3 times because each employer was just like, yo, you can't do that. Yo, it's got to be closer to the dollar. We just don't appreciate those type of initiatives. There's no place for that.
They had an issue with like when you were doing it as a side hustle or was this like your core work at the time? Just understand that.
It was a good mix-in. My side hustle was just on pause at that point, to be real with you. Because it was like, I'm a recruiter. I do agency placements. I fostered a community. Like I said, this WhatsApp community grew to like 400 or 500 people within like the Toronto area. So anytime I got a job, I'd be like, yo, there's a job that I'm recruiting for. I would get like 50 resumes of qualified people, right? And send that in and like people would be getting hired. But like in order to build a community, you have to give to the community. You know what I'm saying? So like, it wasn't just enough. Like, I just never felt right only engaging with people to further my own goals or further my own benefit, right? Because like, I'm like, that's too small thinking. Like, don't, like, how am I going to say don't talk to me unless I have a job I'm specifically recruiting for that you're a good fit for? So I was like, nah, like, you give to me, I give to you. And like, that's how we grew our group as well. Because, you know, people would be getting jobs, they'd be feeling confident, they'd be getting insights, and they'd be bringing more people into it. So like, again, my side business was paused because this took up my time. But like, it started because of the hostility I started getting from management. I reactivated the side hustle and I did things under that brand. I just positioned it as them just having the benefit of just of like that. That's what comes with it, right? Like, that is the ripple effect, you know, of engaging with me. You're going to get somebody that's a community advocate and you're going to get somebody that's tapped into different sectors for black people. And that leads to hires for you at no extra cost.
That's how you got the nickname of Job Father. All right. I mean, that makes good sense.
I got the nickname of Job Father. I got the branding right here.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. I guess, too, like thinking about, like, I'm just thinking about my experience being a black agency owner in London, of all places. Like, I'm often at events and I'm the lone speck of pepper in a sea of salt, as it were. And, you know, I've had other agency owners come to me and say, like, I don't believe in positive discrimination, you know, but they won't bat an eyelash at kind of hiring someone because, you know, like little Nepo babies who like their cousins, you know, uncles, friend referred them and stuff like that, or, you know, they'll look at someone and be like, oh, Oxford, Cambridge, like, boom, like, let's get them in here. You know what I mean? They don't think holistically about it. And I've even had, you know, agency owners reach out to me and ask me for free time from me to help them make their staff more diverse. And I'm just like, look, for me, it's like a simple formula. It's like, first and foremost, make it a priority. I think a lot of folks don't make it, like, they don't truly in their bones say, I am making it a priority for my team to be truly diverse and prioritize black Asian, Latino hires. And I think that's the first problem. Like, it's, if they look in their hearts, it's not a priority for them. And I'm sure you've probably experienced that for, you know, across a lot of the organizations you worked in. The second thing is, I think your hiring is only going to be as diverse as your actual network. So a lot of these folks don't even have like a diverse pool of folks to draw from, you know, as leaders. Like, I take it upon myself as a leader of a company to have a diverse network from which I can draw potential employees and future employees. And a lot of these folks just don't. So they feel uncomfortable with that, because that's when they coming to grips with that is an identity quake. You know, they feel uncomfortable. They know that they live in places like London where you can trip over black and brown people all the live long day, but they still don't have a diverse network. Even in a place like this, you can extrapolate that out to New York, San Francisco, any other diverse tech hub or whatever. And then I think the final thing is they don't treat having a diverse team like a product. They don't actually put timelines and measurements and benchmarks to it, because they actually don't want to hold themselves accountable for that, because that's not, again, it's not a priority. It's not a goal. You know what I mean? So I just feel like if they can put those ingredients together, you know, make it a priority, have a diverse network to draw from and consciously build it, and then run it like you would all your products and services, I think they would make a difference. You know what I mean? Like, how does that formula land for you? Like, do you feel like there's more to it than that? Or do you look at it differently? Just curious your take.
I'm in total agreement with that, because if a company ever says to me that they're struggling to hire black people, I always say, let me look at what your talent team looks like. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. a lot of time the talent team is usually like the first bet. Like, we run workshops that teaches companies on how to like actually source specifically for black talent. And a good chunk of that workshop is just like either A, informing them, hey, like, there are black people on platforms like LinkedIn too. It's not like we're not all hiding in like one secret sector of the internet.
Yeah. Have you heard of black Twitter?
Yeah. You can't type in blacktwitter.com and like you go get a list of like black people and whatnot.
But it's like, also to your point, like starting from the beginning, like I find that a lot of these folks, they want to have that conversation 4 or 5 years into their company journey, when they're, as your point, their leadership team, their talent team looks nothing like the diverse, you know, staff that they want to build. And it's like, well, black folks are going to look at that and be like, I don't want to work there. You know what I mean? So you can't start that late. Like, you have to start from the beginning and make sure your leadership team is diverse to some extent. Your board is diverse. Your founding team to some extent is diverse. A, because it's just good business. Read the McKinsey report. Like, it's just going to make your team better. B, it's the right thing to do. And C, it's going to make it easier to hire folks, black folks in particular, later on down the line.
Most definitely. Like, A, people's networks are filled with people that look like them. And B, it's easier just to track people when you have leadership or just representation of people that look like them. I speak with a lot of black women, and you know, one of the benefits of remote work for a lot of black women was the fact that they didn't have to go deal with the whole, oh, you changed your hair conversation anytime they wanted to do a new hairstyle or something. And that stuff just gets really exhaustive. Code switching gets exhausting, you know.
Microaggressions so, like, in the workplace.
We have all these microaggressions get exhausting. Like, the list literally goes on, you know what I'm saying? So it's like, can a brother get a break?
Yeah. Well, appreciate that. Well, I mean, just real quick, just to wrap up, like, what, you know, obviously, like, we've seen the recent layoffs, like, hit black folks particularly hard. We've seen, you know, sort of the rollback of a lot of these DEI programs and sort of folks kind of running away from, you know, obviously you mentioned affirmative action sort of being scuttled in the U.S. What's your outlook for 2024 and beyond in terms of, you know, increasing black representation in tech in particular? What do you see coming down the pike?
I'm not going to sugarcoat it. It's going to be rough. Yeah. For the next little bit. I think that because of the economy now, we're able to see a lot of companies, they're really like their true sides of it. And a lot of them don't want to make the investment. They're happy to do the hires, but they don't want to make the investment to facilitate the hiring of it. So it's going to be a bit painful for the next little bit. But the best thing that you can do for your career, just as a whole, not even in the bad times, but also in the good times, it's a network. It's to find people on the inside of an organization that look like you, build community, you know what I'm saying? Build relationships so that when the time comes, when the pendulum swings the other way, you have full advantage. But like, even then, don't get comfortable, right? ABN, always be networking, always be investing in your community, and always be investing in the development of your skills, right? It's not impossible to get a job in this market in today. It's just really, 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 really hard. So you need to find a way to make a niche for yourself, but like also future think as well. And that means building that network, and that means investing in those skills And that means making sure that you are as attractive as a candidate as possible, because that's the only way that we're going to win. Community and skill development.
Yeah. And I love that's a great place. And I think the one thing I'd add to that too is like, we need co-conspirators and accomplices, you know, across the racial spectrum to kind of help us break down those networks that keep us out, you know, because even as strong and powerful as our networks are, I think there's the persistence of dominant networks that keep us out of roles that you said earlier, that we're overqualified for, that we've worked twice as hard to get towards, you know what I mean? So I think we need folks to kind of, or we benefit from folks, not need is a strong word, who are, you know, working on the inside to kind of break those existing dominant networks and policies and procedures that keep us out, you know, and get them out of our way, frankly. So that's a vote for folks in all these tech companies to kind of, you know, look around and see what can I, you know, deconstruct a little bit that's keeping really good folks out of good jobs and help build these networks. So Jermaine Murray, I really appreciate the job, father. Appreciate you coming on and chatting with us today. I love the work that you're doing. Congratulations on your 401st hire for Black folks looking in tech for tech jobs. Really appreciate the work that you're doing. Where can folks find out more about Jupiter HR and the good work that you're doing on the interwebs?
Yeah, you can find us at jupiterhr.ca, or you can look at for me on all your major social media platforms. I'm the job father. Yeah, just hit me up, Google me, and always down to connect. And thank you for having me.
Of course, Jermaine, the job father, founder of Jupiter HR, doing some amazing work expanding Black representation in tech. Wish you the best of luck with your new journey in Spain. And thanks so much for jumping on Tech Can't Save Us. For all of our guests, please, as always, give us a like, subscribe, you know, smash that subscribe button, please, and give us a 5-star rating. We really appreciate it. And yeah, thank you so much, Jermaine. Really appreciate you having on the show tonight.
Thank you. Adios.
Cheers. Thank you.